listening to the Social Media Church Podcast, the place for conversations with church leaders about social media. This is episode number 105, and I am your host, DJ Chuang. Welcome back for the longtime listeners, and welcome to those of you that are new listeners. And in keeping with my attempt to keep the content and the conversations here as evergreen and timeless, I will not call attention to the latest goings-on in my life and here in the Chuang household, though I will check in with you briefly on the other side of my recorded conversation. The featured conversation for this episode is with Adam Graber. I first found him on an article posted in Christianity Today about how the automobile, yes, the cars that we commute with, has enabled the megachurch. And what we see in our generation are destination churches that have commuters going back and forth from their suburban homes rather than churches that are geographically planted in a local community where people can walk or take public transit for the most part, or at least for the large churches in the world. But he also is an active blogger, a very thoughtful and pondering kind of guy. We're at the second eclectic, and so we have some conversations about communications and social media, of course. So the show notes where you can connect with Adam and his blog is in the show notes at socialmedia.church/105. And here is my conversation with Adam Graber. Hey, Adam Graber is joining me on the Social Media Church podcast. Thank you for making some time to connect.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Now, when I came across your blog, I was just totally transfixed. Your tagline at the second eclectic is, "Technology changes how we relate to God and each other." What's the story behind that, and what does that mean?
That's a great question. I've been reading and writing about technology now for a little over 5 years, maybe a little longer even. And just as I've read and thought about it and, you know, written through my own understanding of it, that's just sort of become a conviction for me. I'm trying to understand, how does this technology shape not only our relationships with each other, but with God? And I guess, yeah, it's kind of become a conviction that it definitely profoundly shapes both. And I think that was a little surprising to me, that to think that the way we use technology and the way that it shapes our lives actually influences our spiritual lives as well, and shapes how we connect with God, and how really, I think, how we put our faith in God in a lot of ways.
Okay, well, we're going to spend some time unpacking that. Which technology change prompted you to really think about this more seriously? Because we've had technology since the beginning of man, in one sense. But it's become more and more digital. It's become more and more interconnected and online. And there's a social media layer to it.
Yeah.
When did it first catch your attention? And what did you notice in terms of how it changed your relationship to God and each other?
I would say, like a lot of good things, it started with a book that I read by a guy named Shane Hipps. He wrote a book in 2006 called The Hidden Power of Electronic Culture. And it's kind of a lesser-known book. He's written some other books since then, but he kind of started me down this path of thinking about how technology is shaping our lives. And, you know, it really kind of, like you said, technology is about as old as humanity. And so when we um, when, I mean, as soon as we're creating things, we're creating technology to make our lives easier, to make our jobs simpler. And so, I mean, it's always been there, and we've kind of always been in the soup. And, or another way to put it is, we've always been in the water, and we're kind of like fish. You don't know the water around you. And so I wouldn't say a specific technology, but I think, you know, there is a lot more conversation about it today, with the internet specifically. I mean, a lot of people are kind of aware of it and have a sense that, having the internet, on their computers and on our phones, something's changing. And I think there's sort of this unease that people have about it, but they're not really sure how to name it, or even if it's just their perception or what it is. And I definitely feel that. And so, but I think it can often be kind of pushed off to the side as being, you know, well, you're just a Luddite, or you're just old-fashioned, or whatever. And I get that, but there's also, I think there's something real to sort of this sense that we have of things are changing. And I think we're kind of in a moment where a lot of us still remember life without the internet, and so we feel that change more dramatically than, say, someone who's under 20 years old.
Right. Yeah, for those of us that have grown up before internet and post-internet, we can see the difference. But yeah. I have a 17-year-old son who's grown up in a world that's always had the internet, so they don't know anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, yeah, I think we're definitely kind of in this moment where things are changing, and I guess for me that's exciting, to have the opportunity to kind of have seen life before the internet and life after, and the generation coming up behind us isn't going to know that. And so, you know, we're kind of at this pivot point, and I want to be able to kind of document that, I guess, and allow it to inform how we think about technology. Because, you know, everything's getting shaken up. We recognize the water that we're in. And so it gives us a chance to really kind of think about this technological environment that we're a part of. And then also to think about it, how it's shaping our spiritual lives and our faith and our churches.
Yeah, and you mentioned Shane Hipp's book, and I think the second edition of that got renamed to something a little more accessible called Flickering Pixels.
Yeah.
Flickering Pixels. And one of the main gists of the book is he's quoting Marshall McLuhan about how the medium is the message, and therefore when we use technology to convey biblical truth, it has a different impact and it carries a different message. But yeah. I love the way you're peeling back another layer of that, and in one of your blog posts you talk about the power differential of online and offline relationships. So help us understand the difference there.
So in this whole moment that we're in, where we're recognizing that technology and the internet and smartphones are kind of upending our lives and kind of upending social etiquette, we react by saying, well, I'm going to unplug this weekend, or there's digital detox camps you can go to, or more spiritually we talk about fasting from Facebook or fasting from social media. And there's sort of this belief, I guess, that real life is more authentic or better for more honest, whatever you want to say, than life online. And there's been talk about that in the past couple of years, and some people, you know, are reacting against that and saying, you know, online is just as real as offline. And I can kind of see both sides. From one standpoint, the truth is, like, there is something lost when you're communicating via Facebook or via Twitter. And it feels less authentic, or it feels very mediated. And so we can't see one another. It's easier to miscommunicate. We can't hear vocal inflection or see facial expressions. But on another hand, it is still very real, in the sense that we are still using our bodies to communicate, even though it's, instead of with our voices, we're using our fingers on a keyboard or on a touchpad. And so we're still engaged, but it is a very specific kind of engagement, and it's an engagement with one another through our computers or through our phones. And each of those technologies requires that we communicate in a very specific way. So we communicate less with our voices through a computer and more through, you know, keyboards. And at the same time, like, we've seen people doing things online that have had real-world implications on their lives. People have, you know, posted things on Facebook and gotten fired for it, or they, they've done a lot of things that that end up having implications for their relationships with one another, and so that all comes out, and so that is very real. And so when we're texting with our friends or communicating via Skype or on Facebook, like, those miscommunications happen, and sometimes those miscommunications have long-term impacts, even though we try and, you know, fix the misunderstanding. And maybe it's not even a misunderstanding that we recognize. Maybe it's just that we have these subtle shifts in the way we communicate with people, and we get less adept at communicating face-to-face. There was research, I think it came out about 18 months ago, maybe it was last year, and it was a New York Times, it became a New York Times article, where they were talking about how the brain understands facial recognition, and how it actually increases blood flow to the brain. I'd have to find the article, but essentially there were physiological developments that came with communicating face-to-face that are lost when, you know, we're texting or whatever. And so, they have real-world implications, I guess, when we are deciding what kind of medium we're going to communicate through. And when we use these technologies, we get better at them. And when we practice them, and they become our habits, and those habits shape our lives. And I think that's really something I've come to recognize, is the ways that we communicate, the ways that we use our technology they shape our lives. The suburbs exist because of the car. We can't get around without the car. And so, you know, we end up spending, you know, on average, what, 25 minutes in the car commuting one way. And so that time alone shapes us in a certain way. So those are just kind of, it kind of goes all over the place, but those are just the ways that I'm interested to think about the ways that technology is having an influence in shaping our habits and routines, shaping our patterns of relating to other people, for better or worse, really.
Yeah, and I really like the way you described just how even though we're doing online communication, whether in real time or asynchronous updates that are words or images that are seen later, that it does have real world impact and real world interaction that can happen. Even before internet, we've had communication that was audio through telephone.
Right.
And we've had communication through the written word or the typed word through pen pals and the written word of the text.
Yeah.
So even though it's electronic form, it's in that sense, it's not foreign in terms of how we communicate, but
right.
somehow the electronic dimension to it really, well, it is a different category, but it's not that different in that sense.
Yeah. Yeah. There's sort of this texting and like IMing both have a very, they have a strange place because you have this immediacy that happens when two people are talking where, you know, I'll send a text and then you can immediately see it and then respond. And so there's a bit of this expectation for an immediate response, but sometimes that doesn't happen. And then, you know, there's a sense of anxiety or, you know, wondering why is this person responding or, you know, are they thinking about it or have they seen it? You know, and so that sort of immediacy paired with kind of the disengagement that happens, it just doesn't mesh well, and it creates weird dynamics between friends. And so, yeah, you're right. I think it definitely has implications and influences that we just don't necessarily expect when we start out.
Yeah, that thing called time shifting.
Yeah.
That we've applied to how we watch television or movies,
yeah.
perhaps is does something to our communication, and perhaps that's why you have a quote on your blog inviting people to have conversation. And you say something to the effect, "Conversations are better than comments, don't you think? If you'd like to continue a conversation, email me."
Yeah.
And I think you're addressing the, you know, compress that time ratio so that you can have a real-time conversation rather than this comment back and forth where it's time separated.
Yeah. Yeah, and it feels like you can have more, you can kind of develop the idea and communicate a little bit more wholly an idea that you have or an impression that you want to communicate than just like that. Yeah, with a comment, like, if I don't post it, I'm going to lose it. I can't save it as a draft, you know? So, yeah, there's just limitations around that. I'm a communication. I love conversation. So,
that's what this podcast is all about. Social media
absolutely.
Is for conversations with church leaders about social media. So let's talk about how social media affects the church, which involves our relationship with people and with God.
Yeah.
How have you noticed social media changing our relationship with God?
I think one example, this isn't directly like something that happens in the worship space, but I think the ways that we put our faith in God or don't put our faith in God definitely have been impacted by technology. So, like, Abraham and Sarah, way back in the day, she's barren, and they don't have any fertility treatment for that. And today, technology has advanced, medicine has advanced to a point where we have options for pregnancy and fertility. And whether you choose to use those options or not, it's still a choice that you have to make. And you can opt in and say, I'm going to use those options because for whatever reason, I can't get pregnant. But you can't say, I'm just going to ignore it. You have to opt out. By saying, I'm not going to use it, you're opting out. And Abraham and Sarah didn't have that option. It just didn't exist. There wasn't a opt-in, opt-out. It just didn't exist. And there was a sense in which they simply had to trust God for offspring.
Although there was a desperation on Abram's part to do kind of a human technology through surrogate with Hagar.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's a good point. You know, he wanted to take it into his own hands, but we saw it as, and I think we read it as a failure on Abraham's part, a failure of faith. And today, those options are a little more abstracted. Hagar doesn't exist, but fertility treatments do. And so I'm not saying fertility treatment is wrong. I think every couple has to, you know, wrestle through that themselves, but they need to wrestle through it. And they need to, you know, think about, okay, am I trusting God with this, or am I trying to take control into my own hands? Because that, I mean, but that's a faith question that in some sense didn't exist in the same way that it did for Abraham and Sarah.
Right. Yeah, we have new options that we have to make moral decisions on. And you alluded to a little bit of it earlier in terms of technology detox and unplugging and going offline. And so those become new decisions that we have to make in terms of storing our time and storing these new social media.
Yeah. So you were asking, you know, how is social media changing our relationship with God? The communication side of technology is a very complicated one. I think obviously social media is changing the way church staffs communicate. So, you know, they're communicating via email. They may be off-site and, you know, communicating that way. The whole time shifting thing that you mentioned. And so they may see less of each other than they would have before because they can, you know, do a Google Hangout or they can just, you know, resolve some questions internally using group email or, you know, things like that. But it also changes how they're communicating with their people, with the congregation. So, you know, they might be using, instead of going through a litany of announcements in the service, you know, they have online postings that people sort of have to opt in to go find, rather than kind of being, for lack of a better term, force-fed it from the stage. So, you know, there's that sort of thing. But I also think, like, there's a dynamic where if someone chooses not to be a part of Twitter or Facebook or what have you, they end up actually being marginalized in the process. Again, it's this opt-in, opt-out thing. They can't not choose in some sense. I have some friends, you know, who aren't on Facebook, and I think there is a sense in which they can tend to become a little marginalized. It may be small shifts, but it happens. It happens subtly, and it happens over time, where they missed something that happened, quote unquote, on Facebook, or they missed a conversation or whatever, and that can tend to marginalize people just because they didn't choose to opt in to this medium or that medium. And so as churches are, you know, using social media to get their message out to their congregation, I think it is important to really evaluate, like, okay, who has the potential to be marginalized in this situation? Who has the potential to kind of be pushed off to the side by our using only this medium to announce, you know, our next sermon series, or you know, announce a staff change or whatever it is. You know, that it's important, I think, especially important for the church, because I think, you know, Jesus calls us to look out for the marginalized. And I think, you know, to understand, okay, how does this social media, how does that technology actually marginalize people who choose not to opt into it?
Well, here's the thing. Even pre-internet, you would occasionally have a person that doesn't have a telephone line. And therefore, that person that didn't have the telephone at home would be part of the prayer chain, which was a very common means of communicating back in the 70s and 80s.
So
the dilemma is has multiplied because we've got so many social networks now.
But
it's not absolutely foreign, just that there are so many now and there's more opportunities to marginalize. To use your analogy.
That's the slippery thing about the way these technologies work is, like you said, it's not new. These dynamics were there before. The fertility dynamics that Abraham faced with Sarah and Hagar, like, those existed then, they exist now in a different way, but there's still something in the human heart that that gets expressed through technology, and when it does, it can work against certain people, and so we need to constantly be reinterpreting the technologies we're using, and understanding how it's marginalizing people, or how it's empowering me against someone else, or how it's, you know, promoting my ego, and marginalizing another person. You know, we constantly need to be understanding and kind of reinterpreting, okay, what are these technologies doing, and how are they hurting the people that we're called to love and care for?
Let me close at this moment, because I've got so many more things to think about, as do you. Have you captured some of your kind of a status of where your thinking has taken you in an ebook or some other form?
My blog is, you can just get to it at thesecondeclectic.com, and that's where I continue to, you know, be thinking about things as they come along, and definitely thinking about it from a biblical perspective, thinking about it in the context of the church a lot too. I've got an ebook that I just published. It's on noise trade, and it's called From Pews to Podcasts: What Technology Wants for the Church. And I think we can, that'll be available. You can connect through my my blog. You can get to it.
Yeah, I'll definitely add a link in the show notes. That sounds like an intriguing title, and perhaps we'll have another occasion to continue the conversation.
Yeah, I'd love it.
Thank you so much, Adam.
Yeah, appreciate
it. Talking with you.
Good to chat with you.
Thank you, Adam Graber, for joining me on the Social Media Church. Appreciate your thoughts about communications, community, and social media and keep thinking those good things, because we need to take some time occasionally to take a step back and ponder just what is it that we are doing with all our activities and actions using technology and social media and running programs and doing the things that we do in church. For the show notes, so you can connect with Adam and his blog, go to the web. The web address, the link, is socialmedia.church/105 for episode 105. Now, those of you that are regular listeners, thank you for being regular listeners and subscribers to this podcast. Of course, you can subscribe on iTunes using your favorite podcatcher app on Stitcher and Pocket Casts on Android or whatever else, or just listen on the web. Those are ways to stay connected to the conversations here. And you may have noticed that there's been a week or two or even three maybe where I have been missing. A podcast episode has been missing. And part of that is due to my heavily intensive travel schedule in October and November of this year. And now we are entering into the Advent season or the Christmas holiday season, depending on how you your church tradition describes that. And it is indeed a joyous occasion. And one of the things that I've been preparing for in our immediate family, I've been married 19 years, we have a 7-year-old son, is that every Christmas and Easter, we take a tour of as many churches as possible during Christmas week or during Easter week. And being here in Orange County, California, we have the option of many, many larger churches with multiple worship times, and actually build a spreadsheet to chart out the times and locations so that I can visit as many churches as possible. Our record is 10 in 1 week. And usually, here's what's surprising, I get more rolling of the eyes from Christians than I do with non-Christians. For the non-Christians, they actually find it fascinating that we would go to that extent of celebrating the holiday season. And isn't it all about worship, as we say, but we tend not to do? And so we're actually doing that, celebrating Christmas as much as possible every single year since 2011. So this is a ongoing tradition. We're into our fourth year. I'll go ahead and add a link in the show notes just to show you what I do in terms of laying out my spreadsheet and charting out all the different churches that have multiple services so that we can chart our Christmas tour here in the OC. And also had a special treat at Disneyland this past weekend. So apparently there is a Christmas tradition that dates back to 1958 called the Disneyland Candlelight Ceremony and Processional, or Candlelight for short. And two nights out of the Christmas season, usually the first weekend of December, though there's not a lot of publicity that comes straight from Disney about this, but it's been going for over 50 plus years. And they have a celebrity narrator that reads the Bible from Luke 2 and Matthew 2 and celebrate the Christmas season with a giant mass choir, probably over 700 voices. From high schools and other select choirs, as well as a cast member choir and the awesome fanfare trumpeters at the rooftop of the train station there at Main Place, Town Square of Main Street there in Disneyland. A beautiful, wonderful worship experience, though they don't call it a worship experience, but the music, the scriptures, the meaning, wow, powerful, beautiful. Oh, an orchestra. Forgot to mention orchestra. And the narrator this year was Bo Bridges. And I was so inspired, not only being there, but wanting to get the word out. So I've built a fan page for Disneyland Candlelight. again, in the show notes at socialmedia.church/105. I'll add a link there for the Candlelight at Disneyland fan page that I've been building with as much information as I can find, so that if you happen to be at Disneyland during the Christmas season, plan around being at the Candlelight, a once-in-a-lifetime experience, and for some, even a ongoing family tradition. Now, on the other side of the country, over at Epcot, they also have these Candlelight experiences, though they package it with a dinner kind of deal, and it's indoors, and it's a different kind of experience, but still very joy-filled Christmas hymns and music and celebration. They're on Disneyland property, or Disney property over there on the East Coast. It's at the Epcot Center. So you'll see some links in the Candlelight fan page. Well, that's my rambling for this episode of the Social Media Church Podcast. Thank you for tuning in again. And subscribe, rate, review. Thank you for those of you that have done that. So that helps people find this podcast and join the conversation. Oh, and I should mention one more thing. I've opened a landing page at socialmedia.church so you can join the conversation, literally, and become a guest, a featured guest on a future episode of Social Media Church. So if there's something that you want to talk about regarding social media and the church, you're welcome to. I'll keep the barrier of entry fairly low. And we have all kinds of guests. You don't have to be part of a staff. You don't even necessarily have to be a volunteer at church, though you should be a church-going person, whatever form of church that your faith has led you to as a follower of Christ. And then we'll create an episode around a conversation we record over on Skype, on Google Plus, or on a telephone. Okay, so the invitation is open. The floodgates are open. We'd love to have you join the conversation here at Social Media Church. Again, the show notes, socialmedia.church/105. And in the meantime, we'd love to stay connected with you online over any social media channel you like, Twitter, Facebook, Google Plus, even Instagram and Pinterest. No, sorry, I'm not on Instagram. Everything else I just mentioned, and of course, the traditional email. I am DJ Chuang signing off, and until next time, we'll stay connected online.